All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 26 of The Drop Set, your home for bodybuilding information, tips, tricks, sundries, and how-tos, etc. Today, we've got a couple topics lined up. We've got the usual suspects of recurring features, and then we're going to have two discussion topics. We're going to talk about the scale and progress, and then we're also going to talk about your progress photos and why they suck and how we're going to fix them. So my name is Darren Starr, owner, trainer, coach here at Five Star Physique. We are recording this for uploading to iTunes, Google Play, and it will also be available as a recorded podcast on the website at fivestarphysique.com. I am also going to give a shout out to the YouTube stream that we're recording here. Hi, this is not going live, but it will be recorded and put up on YouTube later. And then also saying hi to, what do we have here? This is Instagram. Hi, guys. And Facebook. We are broadcasting live on both of those platforms right now as well. So I am recording on four devices presently, recording or live streaming on four devices. I'm sure there's a more efficient way to do this, but boy, it sure does make me feel high tech. So I got way too many cameras and microphones pointed in my direction here. It's a little intimidating, I'm not going to lie. So I figured, you know, it's I did this in the very first episode. It is now episode 26. So I figured just very briefly, I want to reintroduce myself to everybody out there in case you have no idea who I am, why anybody should give a crap about anything that I say. And I will say on that, you shouldn't necessarily, but if you listen, you will probably find that you can learn some stuff and, you know, be challenged on the way that you approach things when it comes to bodybuilding, you know, fitness related stuff, lifting, nutrition, etc. And anything that you can do to open your mind and expand your horizons a little bit is a good thing. So I've been doing this. I am a coach. I work exclusively online. I have zero clients that I work with in person. So what that means is that everything I do, everything that I write is geared towards working with people that I'm probably never going to see in person. So I think that's a valuable thing to know when you're working with a coach, because you can look and say, oh, well, this coach got all these results with people and they coach online, but those two things do not necessarily coincide. You know, they can get great results with people they work with in person. Can they translate that over to people that they don't actually see? Because there is a lot that can get lost in translation there. So that is my expertise. My background from an education perspective is varied. So when I first went to college, I actually went as a music major, and I thought I was going to be a music teacher of all things. So go figure. And then I took a little break. I worked in the tech industry for a little while. Then I went back to go to school for civil engineering of all things. And then was doing great. I really enjoyed the coursework for that. And had an internship with a wind energy company in Portland, Oregon, which was a lousy, miserable experience. And it really opened my eyes to the fact that, hey, this stuff is fun in practice, but I don't want to do this for the rest of my life. So I took a little break from my studies then, right at the start of my senior year, got my personal training certification and never looked back. So that's where I am right now. Other stuff that I like to do, I am in a couple bands. I do some woodworking and stuff like that. So there you go. That's enough about me. I got two dogs. If you are really paying attention to one of the videos here, you may see one of them like roam around this area that I'm pointing at right here or on YouTube. That's her bed right there, and she's going to go into it eventually. So, and then my other boy over here is chill. He's caught in a sunbeam. So anyway, that's me in a nutshell. So I just figured it'd be good to recap that so that everybody who might be listening for the first time now and doesn't go all the way back to the beginning, because it's a lot to get caught up on, you have some idea of who the hell I am. So what's been going on this week? I've been doing a lot of stuff on YouTube of all things. And if you look at my channel, you'll notice that while I've been doing a lot of stuff, I haven't uploaded anything in a week. So that is the calm before the storm. I'm actually taking a little self-training class on YouTube as far as video production and stuff. So we will see some stuff start to appear there, hopefully, the end of this week. I'm going to be starting a recurring weekly video, you know, whatever, video blog or whatever, where it's going over some a single topic. So it could be a Q&A thing, it could be a how-to, it could be tip, a trick, anything like that, but something that goes a little bit more in depth. And it'll be, you know, 5 to 10 minutes, something like that. But the plan is to do one of those weekly. So other than that, everything's been pretty steady. I've been focusing on client work, and that's about it. my clients are enough to keep me busy. So we did have a Q&A that actually went off without a hitch this time on Monday. Went off at 3 o'clock. I had internet access. I was on time for it and everything. Had some good questions in there. So we'll be doing that again next week. I'd certainly encourage you to come and check that out if you have time. It's at 3 o'clock Eastern time currently. If anybody feels strongly about, you know, like, hey, can you do it at this time or that time? I'm open to it. I'm looking to get a greater presence, a little bit more interaction in there. So 3 o'clock, I just randomly picked that as a time. If there's some other time that might work better for people, let me know. Have at it. Okay, so we are live streaming this on, as I said, Facebook, hi, Instagram, hi. Any questions, comments, etc. that you've got, fire away. I will try and work them in throughout the discussion here, keeping in mind for all you podcast listeners out there, if it sounds like I'm randomly blurting out things, it's in response to a comment, but I will try and keep that relatively clear so you can hear that. Okay, my week, just recapping what I've done personally. I mean, basically, what is it? Gym, tan, laundry? No. Diet, train, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it's been a fairly standard week, uneventful, which as I tell my clients when they check in with me, if you've had an uneventful, boring week, that's a good thing. if your check-in notes to me a number in the pages and it's talking about all the things that went wrong, I can pretty much guarantee it's not been a productive time, or at least if it's been productive, it hasn't been a low-stress time at least. So the other thing, if you can see this here, I'll hold this up for the cameras, my fancy wrist splint. So, we have a friend who is a physical therapist, and she's actually retiring, in January. So early congratulations, Carol, you've earned it. It occurred to me, like, I totally forgot she was a physical therapist. I'm like, hey, Carol, my elbow is really bugging me. What the hell's going on? And in about 12 seconds, she diagnosed it completely and said, you need a splint. You need to, you know, wear this when you're at the computer and when you're sleeping. Because the tendonitis in my elbow had gotten to the point where, you know, I can't do a lateral raise at this point. Several variations of curls are just off the table completely. But it's funny. You know, it's tendonitis, but, and she said, you know, pretty much anything overhand is probably something that is going to cause some degree of discomfort, but I can do like an overhand barbell row with, I think earlier this week I worked up to 315 for a working set, perfectly fine. No issues there whatsoever, but a lateral raise with 10 pounds, just holding the weight and starting the movement, it's like agony. So go figure. So I'm having to make a few modifications to training, but nothing huge, nothing significant. And this right here, this is right about the most significant injury I've ever had in my life. So I consider myself lucky to be in that camp. So let's see. The diet carries on as well. I'm getting some changes from my coach on that front as well. So, oh, he's cutting down my carbs a little bit. So apparently somebody's too fat. It's okay. I don't take it personally. All right. So we have our two regular segments here that we hit pretty much every week is some kind of a bodybuilding myth, which could also be, as it is if this week, just kind of an off-the-wall question. And then we have a rant. So I got a lot of good feedback on last week's rant, which was basically had to do with objectifying women. So stop it. I'm just going to reiterate that. Guys out there, nobody cares what your opinion is when it comes to a woman's body. So shut up. So let's talk about the myth. So I joined a couple of closed groups on Facebook that are bodybuilding related. And it's interesting because my clientele, you know, the population that I work with is about 60% women, which I think if you go to a typical show, that's about the makeup of competitors. You know, there's typically more women there than men simply because there are more competitive divisions available for women these days. So about 60% women, and on this group, it's like 95% men. So I know immediately it's like not necessarily representative of my client base. But nonetheless, it's good because, you know, it's kind of a, it's really dominated by entry level people. And by that, I mean like, hey, I've been lifting for 2 weeks. Can somebody, you know, check my progress here? That kind of thing. So some of the questions, I mean, you should, you know, I think the group is simply called Bodybuilding. It's a closed group. It's got like 35,000 members or something like that. You should go join in and check it out just so that you can kind of see, see what's going on and realize like, wow, I might feel like I'm kind of new at this, but I'm a damn pro compared to some of these people. Because it really just kind of opens your eyes like, wow, it's a good refresher for me. Like, oh yeah, people don't automatically just know all this stuff. And you know, when you're trying to put together a plan, some of your questions are not so much like, hey, is exercise X better than exercise Y? But you know, like, do I need to lift more than 2 times a week if I want to build muscle and something like that? So, it's been an interesting experience for me. The one question that I've got that was really off the wall, and this is pretty much just for guys. But the question was, and I quote, does sex or masturbation affect bodybuilding? So we'll let that sink in for just a second there. And I've had this question come from a client before. So, and it wasn't really a question when it came from a client. He was starting his pre-contest cut and he said something to me, which I thought was interesting. He's like, so I know that sex is a bad thing. So I'm planning on abstaining from anything sexual for the entirety of my cut. Like, oh dear Lord. I mean, so let's talk about this, first of all. When we're talking about hormones in the body, I mean, you know, we're talking about long-term order of magnitude changes are the things that really kind of move the needle. So if you are looking to take, let's say, guys, you're looking to take Tribulus terrestris, so over-the-counter, and you want to take that for 4 weeks, is that going to do anything? Absolutely not. It's basically worthless. There's no point in doing that. It's going to give you a increase in your testosterone levels by a few percentage points while you take it. A few percentage points is not enough to really do anything. The most powerful thing that you'll get from that would be the placebo effect from feeling like you're taking something that's productive and moving you in the right direction. Now, if you want an order of magnitude change, now you're talking about like injectable testosterone, you know, synthetic, what's the word? Bio, well, whatever. I mean, you know, you're talking about hormone replacement therapy. That is effective, yes, which is why high-level bodybuilders do that, because it does something. It does not come without side effects, however. So the same principle can apply to this. So when you're talking about sexual activity, what you're talking about is a short-term drop in your testosterone levels for the period following that. So what I would not recommend is to engage in sexual activity, guys, as your pre-workout activity. That is not the time to do it. However, just the fact that somebody is asking this question, it was somebody that literally had been lifting for like a month, and this is the question that they ask. This goes back to what we talked about last week when we talked about the hierarchy of bodybuilding concerns, and we went over all of those things that you can possibly be worried about, and we kind of split them out into tiers. So top tier, middle tier, third tier, you know, what to worry about at the beginning, intermediate, and advanced stages. This is something that if you are at the highest level of bodybuilding, I still would not put this in your sphere of concern. So I think I commented something to that effect on the post originally as well. Just, comment from Arthur. Yeah, I hear you, dude. It happens. So yeah, your sex drive can be impacted a little bit by your diet as well. That it can work the other way too. So, but the question of, oh, should I avoid sex because it's going to kill my gains? It's like, this is just, you know, they say there's no dumb question. And I believe that this kind of challenges that a little bit because it's not a brilliant question, but, I would say the only dumb question is one that I've answered many times to the same person. So there is such a thing as a dumb question. This one, I mean, you know, it's silly. It's not something to be concerned about. So there you go. It's almost like, I didn't plan it this way, but there's almost a theme here. So let's talk about the rant. We're going to talk about some porn here real quick. So don't worry. This is a safe for work podcast and discussion. So did that get anybody's attention? Anybody paying attention now? What? He said porn? Wait, hold on. Let me rewind. What did I miss? Basically, my rant for this week has to do with fitness as porn. And specifically social media fitness posts that are clearly trending in that direction. For what purpose, I have no idea. And I will full disclosure right here, I will say I have not necessarily fleshed out a full argument against this right now. So what you're getting is just off the cuff, unrehearsed stream of consciousness stuff. It's disturbing. I really think it is. And, you know, I mean, we've all taken a shirtless selfie or whatever, or women like, you know, a sports bra, hey, check me out, blah, blah. That's fine. You know, I'm not going to judge anybody for doing that. But when you are like, you know, manipulating your clothes in such a way, like you're pulling your shorts down so you can show every last little bit of everything that they will let you show publicly on social media, I got to be like, what are you doing that for? Or you're naked and strategically covering things up, or, you know, you're putting little emojis over the parts. I mean, you're censoring yourself. I'm like, what are you doing this for? Stop it. I mean, I know what you're doing it for. You want to do it for followers, but what are you trying to get those followers for? What is it going to do for you? Because having a lot of people follow you doesn't do anything. You know, it's the quality of the followers, not the quantity. So if you want a lot of eyeballs on you, great. I would question why. What does that do for you? Is it just an ego trip or what? You look great. Awesome. How many people do you need to tell you you look great before you start to actually believe it yourself and feel validated? Okay, so that's really all I had to say about that. It's just, it's disturbing, it bothers me, and it also bothers me because I bust my ass on social media trying to deliver decent content, and I've got a tiny little following, and then I see somebody who posts like 5 pics, and they're all just like major cleavage and ass shots, and they've got like 20,000 followers. I'm like, that's not fair. That's not fair. So yeah, it's a little bit of sour grapes. I'm a little jealous, I'm not going to lie, but still. Clean it up. Clean it up, people. Come on. Come on. Just remember, you might have kids one day that go back and look at those. What are you going to tell them? Oh, God. I really feel like an old man now. I'm going to shut up before I really start to embarrass myself here. Okay, so let's move on. Let's move on. Is anybody still there? Yeah. Okay, great. Thanks. Two topics today. The first one is one that is very near and dear to me because I feel strongly about it. I won't lie. I really do. So that is talking about the scale. I know it is very common these days in the fitness world, and one of the prevailing themes is, you know, the scale doesn't dictate your progress or lack of progress, your failure or your success. And I agree with that. But using it as a tool to measure progress is fair and valid and not a bad idea. What you need to do is make sure that you don't look to the scale for validation. If you do, then you have failed. If you are expecting, you step on the scale and you're expecting a certain number, you're expecting it to validate the work that you've put in previously and give you that number that you feel like you have earned in order to feel like your effort was well spent, that's the wrong approach. All it's doing is giving you information. So that's the important thing to keep in mind. And what does that information mean? What does it tell you? How can we really kind of get the most useful data out of that information? What can we ignore? What do we pay attention to? So let's talk about it. So the scale, clearly, it tells you one thing. It's how much you weigh. It's your mass times the gravitational pull of Earth on you, and that gets you a weight. Sorry, I was having a physics fail there. So mass times acceleration, or a force, actually. A pound is a force. So there you go. Okay. My goodness. My civil engineering and physics teachers would not be proud of me right now. So the only thing it can tell you is how much you weigh. So it cannot tell you your body composition or anything like that. If you have a scale that thinks that it can tell you that, a bioimpedance scale where you step on it barefoot or you hold something with your hands and it's got little sensors there and it says, hey, I am a smart scale. I can tell you what your body fat percentage is. I can tell you what your water percentage is, what your visceral fat is, what your lean tissue percentage is, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Don't believe it, because it is almost certainly wrong. When I finished up my last cut, well, when I started my last cut in March of this year, I had a scale like that, and I tracked the number just because I was curious. And it said that I was about 30% body fat when I started that. Eyeballing it, I was closer to like 13, but it said I was 30%. So hey, who am I to argue? It's a scale. It's a machine, right? It can't be wrong. And by the time I finished my cut, it said I was 25%. I was like, you know, eight or nine, something like that. So why was it off by so much? I mean, I had my details plugged in there. It knew my gender. It knew my height. It knew my weight, of course. It knew my age. Why was it off? Because it is not an accurate representation of reality. Now, one thing that you will notice there is it started at 30-ish. It ended at like 26. So it clearly trended down, and it trended down by, you know, give or take more or less about the same percentage of body fat that I dropped throughout the cut. So it does show you that things are moving and trending in a certain direction, which is the only reason why I continue to track that number throughout my cut. But the number itself is incorrect. So other measurements for measuring your body fat, as we've discussed before in previous episodes, not necessarily terribly accurate either. So skin fold caliper measurements to determine a body fat percentage. There's a lot of margin of error that's introduced in that process. And then you're introducing further error when you take those skin fold measurements and then try to convert those into a body fat percentage. So it's taking an estimate of a potentially sketchy reading depending on your skill with calipers. So bioimpedance sucks. Calipers, very hit or miss. Even hydrostatic weighing, there's certainly some margin of error in that. It's also not practical to do on a regular basis. Same thing with DEXA scans, which are more reliable, but also very impractical. You can, you know, get one as a checkup every few months, but more often than that, it's just not realistic. So using the scale, yeah, Emily says, the last time she checked, the scale said she was 40%. You are not. I can guarantee you that. You are not 40%. So, yeah, those things are crap. I mean, that result, like what you're seeing there and the result that I've seen before, is abnormally inaccurate. They're typically not reliably accurate, but they're not usually that bad. So why? I don't know. I mean, if it was something where I was really relying on that to be precise data, I might look more into it, but I'm not, because I know that even if I did, it's still only going to be so precise. So all the other measurements for checking body fat, for checking, you know, body composition, not terribly reliable or not terribly practical. So therefore, the scale is the one useful number that we really have. And you'll say, well, Darren, what about like circumference measurements and stuff like that? I'm like, yeah, I mean, those are fairly useful as well, but those can be skewed every bit as much. So, you know, if you've ever pulled a tape measure around your waist to check it, do that. And now, you know, breathe, take a few deep breaths, and let yourself come to rest at a slightly tighter posture, and then pull that tape tight, and just maybe a little bit tighter than before. You can get a fluctuation of an inch in doing that. Easily an inch. If you're just a little bit higher or lower, and you're not absolutely like, you don't have absolutely laser-like precision in where you take those measurements, the number is going to fluctuate because of that as well. If you're trying to measure a bicep and you want it, and you're not doing it cold, but you want to see what does my bicep measure with a pump, it depends on the quality of your pump and also how accurate you are with the tape, how tightly you stretch it, all that kind of stuff. So all of those are fallible, and I would say they're fallible to the point where they're not particularly useful. Now, a scale can certainly show you a lot of weird information, but it's easier to kind of, in my opinion, it's kind of easier to think through and parse through some of those details to get to a little bit more of the honest truth. So the first thing that you need to do when using the scale to track progress, and again, it's one of the tools, one of many, and we've talked about those before. You also use photos, the fit of clothes, how you look, how you feel, your energy levels, your appetite. All of those things need to be used together. None of those individually is anything to rely on, but all of them together will give you a pretty comprehensive picture of where you're at. So using the scale, the first thing is, again, like I said, do not let it determine your worth. Do not have emotional attachment to it. It's just a number. It's just data. That's all there is to it. So don't get worked up about if the number is higher than you wanted to see or if it's not as low as you wanted to see, whatever. It's just data. And then you need to kind of take yourself out of it a little bit and think about it from an analytical perspective and think about, why is the number looking like that? So let's talk about it. Let's go over some of those things. So the other thing to, another thing to consider with this is the more data you collect, the sooner you'll be able to reach a conclusion about what's going on. So if you weigh yourself monthly, over the course of half a year, you'll have six numbers, and then you can determine a trend and see what's going on. For most of us, if we are actively following a plan and we are actively looking to track our progress, that ain't going to cut it. You don't want to wait 6 months to see if, oh, okay, well, I guess I'm doing something right, or man, nothing's moving. What's going on? And you know, so you could say, well, Darren, you know, you could track yourself, you could weigh yourself this month and then weigh yourself again the next month and know what's going on. And I will say, not necessarily, because those numbers fluctuate. And let's take a more practical approach, because a lot of the clients that I work with, until they understand what I'm really after, they'll weigh themselves once a week on the day that they check in with me. And then I will say, no, I need more numbers than that. Please give me more numbers. I don't need seven numbers every week, but give me more numbers. And then I have to go through this whole conversation with them. So the reason being is, over the course of a week or a month or a year, your weight is going to fluctuate. It is not going to be steady. It is not going to be predictable. It is not going to do what you think it's going to do. So seeing what that fluctuation does over the course of a week, and then pairing that up with deviations, alterations, variations in how you've approached your plan and how you've approached your diet, how you've approached your water intake, how you approach your sodium intake, all of those things throughout the week, you can start to develop a more comprehensive picture of what's really going on. Like, you may notice, under most circumstances, you'll be cruising along, little fluctuation here, and then we have a cheat meal or a big giant carb refeed or something like that, and the next day, boom, scale goes up. Well, what's up with that? You know, I mean, you might think, oh, I ate too much, and so I put on all this fat. Ugh. Well, you know, fat doesn't move that quickly. You don't gain body fat that quickly. You know, you can see the scale jump up 2, 3, 6, 7 pounds in a day. That is not fat. What it means is you're holding water, and you're probably holding solid waste as well. Now, we all hold all of those things at all times, but you're probably holding more than you typically do. And when you have a high-carb meal, certainly you're giving your digestive system more to work on, so it's going to take longer to move through you. And also, carbs, you know, one of the things that they do in the body is they promote water retention to some extent. And that's good, because we want the muscles to be full. We want those glycogen stores to be full. Fluid is what does that. So holding a little bit of water because of that is not necessarily a bad thing. So when you see a 5 pound jump in the scale following a carb up or a refeed, it's not the end of the world. That's your body doing what it's supposed to do. And then we'll see it kind of trend back down after that. Now, if you go totally overboard, I mean, sure, you can put on some fat, but, you know, I mean, I'm just going to make up some numbers here. If you see that scale jump up 5 pounds, you might be looking at, like, you know, a half to 1 pound, and that would be really aggressive of fat. It's really hard to do much in one day, even if you're trying to do damage. So don't let that be a challenge that I'm issuing to people. Don't say, well, I'm going to prove him wrong. I'm going to put on 5 pounds of fat in one day. I'll show him. Don't do it. It's not worth it. But keep in mind, so the more data points you can collect, the sooner you can reach a conclusion as to what's going on, and you can start to get an idea of the accuracy of these numbers. So why infrequent measurements, whether it's weekly or monthly, are much less useful is because on any given day, you could be recording a scale number that is about average, for, you know, a pretty decent representation of where you are. It could be above average because you're retaining water, you're retaining solid waste for whatever reason. Maybe you're actually gaining weight because you're doing a terrible job following your plan. Or it could be lower than average because you woke up super super dry, really dehydrated. You know, whatever reason, maybe you're just totally cleaned out. So those anomalies, you know, what if we record one of those anomalies? Like, we wake up one day and the scale says, you know, we've been cruising along at like 130 pounds and we wake up one day and we're 127. And that's the number that we record. And it's just because, you know, we had something that, you know, maybe we had a stomach bug or something that really cleaned us out. We'd taken a bunch of fluids. We expel a bunch of fluids as well. So you wake up just super dehydrated the next day. So 127, you're like, woohoo, that's awesome. But then the next day, you don't step on the scale. But if you did, it'd be like 129 and a half, because you gain it all back, because that kind of temporary fluid loss, is not sustainable. Your body will get that back again. So if somebody does that and they record like a 3 pound drop in 1 week and that's the only number that we have, I'm going to be like, hey, that's cool, but let's wait and see what happens next week. And please get me some more numbers along the way. So, you know, you don't know if you only get those numbers infrequently, if that number is an accurate representation of where you're at, if it's abnormally low or abnormally high. Do you need a scale number every day? No, certainly not. I mean, I didn't get one today, mostly just because I forgot, actually. But I typically do. You know, I track it in a spreadsheet and I look at it and I look at the trends over time and I see what happens. I don't necessarily care about what the number does because it's secondary. I mean, I want to track it because it is one indicator. But I want to know, I want to see how I feel, I want to see what I look like, and I'm going to take that into consideration as well. So what else is there to say about the scale? So the frequency of numbers that you get, the more data you collect, the sooner you can make a determination as far as what's going on. Keep in mind that those big fluctuations is largely going to be water retention. So you should think about the things that influence water retention, either that make you hold on to more or make you expel more. So things like water intake being the big one. And usually it's an inverse relationship. If you take in a bunch of water, you're going to hold less. If you are short on water intake, you're going to retain more. Sodium intake. As you take in more sodium, your body will hold on to more water as well. Sleep is a big one, just because our main mechanism for actual weight loss, so like, you know, seeing a lower number on the scale, is water loss through respiration. So, and you do that when you sleep. So if you sleep more, you're going to lose more weight. If you sleep in by 4 or 5 hours, you wake up and you're like a pound and a half lower than the day before. You're like, woohoo, awesome. It's a false reading. I mean, it's an accurate reading, but you're getting excited about it for the wrong reason. So on a normal day, that number would be right back up to where it's supposed to be. So abnormal sweat output. So if you have a day where you're losing a lot and you're not hydrating to match that, you can expect to see some wonkiness the next day. If you have a really brutal leg workout, a really brutal workout, especially for a large muscle group like legs or back, you know, you're going to promote that muscle to hold on to and retain a little bit more water for the next couple days as well. So lots of things that can go into that, lots of things that can impact that. Keep in mind to just not get overly excited about a single number that you get, and know that if you see those big fluctuations, like really drops down, really spikes up, there's usually a really good reason for it, and you just kind of need to think about it a little bit and not get overly excited and not get overly defeated, but just try and take a slightly more even keel approach on everything. So hopefully that helps. The scale is a very useful tool. It is not exclusively anything that you should use just by itself, but as one weapon in your bat utility belt, absolutely, it's a good thing to use. So let's talk about the other tool, and this is one that we'll be talking about much more soon, and these are progress photos. So I will be doing a YouTube video that's kind of a companion to this discussion as well, that will have some visual aid, some demonstrations of what to do and what not to do. So progress pics, we all love them, right? Absolutely, we do. Yeah. So here's the thing. I look at a lot of progress photos, and most of them are terrible. And it has nothing to do with the subject in the photo, and it has everything to do with this one very harsh reality that I hope nobody takes personally, and that is that you suck at photography. That's all there is to it. And I don't blame you, because it's a difficult subject to master. And certainly I don't consider myself a master of it. If you wanted me to go and take a photo of something that would be fit for using in a professional sense, no, it ain't going to happen. The composition's going to be way off. I don't understand anything about, you know, saturation or white balance or how to use a manual exposure camera or manual focus. I don't understand any of that crap at all. Thankfully, for what we're doing here, we don't have to either. You have to understand two concepts, perspective and light. That's it. So the thing is, all of these are very easy to overcome. I did have several clients. I announced yesterday that I was going to be talking about this, and I got messages via text, Instagram, and email from clients like, is this because of me? Which I thought was hilarious. And in all cases, I said, no, it's not about you. But, you know, if I'm being honest, yeah, it's about you. But not exclusively you. So anybody watching this, no, you are not the sole reason for this. And I will tell you, of all the people that I'm working with currently, none of you would make the Hall of Fame of bad progress picks that I have stored in my archive. So you're all doing okay. But that being said, we can go from okay to great with just a few little tricks here. So the first thing, there are four basic things to think about when it comes to progress picks. Let me just lay them all out for you right here. Number one is your posing. We'll talk about that very, very briefly here. Number two is consistency. Number three is camera positioning. And number four is your backdrop, what shows up behind you. So if we can handle all four of those things, we're going to be in great shape when it comes to progress picks. So the first thing, posing. What you need to do is pose to showcase your progress. What we are trying to do at all times is to build or maintain muscle and to lose or maintain body fat, depending on the phase that we're in. So we need to pose to showcase potential progress there, which means you cannot just stand relaxed in a progress photo like you're standing at the DMV getting your picture taken. Conversely, you wouldn't hit quarter turns at the DMV. So there's a time and a place for everything. So we need to pose to showcase your progress, which means understanding how to hit proper quarter turns. That's the main thing. I'd say male or female, regardless of competitive division, I want to see nice, tight quarter turns, which, you know, front, side, back, other side, turning to the right 90 degrees each way. For somebody who's competing in, say, the bikini division that's not actually going to use those poses on stage, good to practice them and be able to pull them off anyway, just because it does, as we've talked about before, it does help with mind-muscle awareness, body coordination, and all that kind of stuff. So work on it anyway, even though it's not going to be a pose that you use on the stage. Does it have to be perfect? No, you're not going to be judged on that, but it does allow you to kind of showcase, like, you know, if you're just standing there, relaxed in a photo, I can't see anything about, you know, how your shoulders might be progressing. I can't see what your lats are doing. I can't see what your waist looks like in relation to those. You know, if nothing has tension in them, we can't see, you know, extra detail that's showing up, unless, you know, your shoulders have really, really seriously grown, or your legs have really, really, really cut up. That's the kind of stuff that will show when you're relaxed, but it takes a long time for that. And if we're doing progress photos on a weekly basis, there's no sense in doing them relaxed. You know, you'd compare your relaxed progress photos from like 1 year to the next, not 1 week to the next. So if you're flexed and everything is tense and you're posing correctly, though, much easier to tell what's going on a week by week or over the course of 2 or 3 weeks. So pose to showcase progress. Now, number two is consistency. So what you need to do, there are so many variables when it comes to taking a picture. What you need to do is make as many of those variables constant as you possibly can. And then the only variable that we're really left with is you and your progress, which should certainly be variable and changing. So what am I talking about? First of all, your outfit. Wear the same thing every time. Every single time. You know, guys, if you have a pair of shorts that you wear, great. Just make it the same ones all the time. You know, really, you know, anybody who's really looking at your photo should be able to see through something like this. And I know I can, but still, I like consistency and I like to just drill this into somebody's head. If you're wearing different color shorts, that can make you look a little different. It can kind of throw your eyes for a loop a little bit. But women especially, you know, you're wearing tops, bottoms that kind of, you know, push and pull and hug and tug on you a little bit differently. It's going to make you look different. And you could be looking really sharp in photos 1 week, and then you put on something that's like, you know, half a size smaller or something like that, and it's squishing you all around, and suddenly you look 5 pounds heavier. But you're not. It's just the way that your outfit is pushing and pulling you around. So same clothes all the time. Same thing with poses. You should hit the same poses all the time and try to be as consistent with those and how you hit them on a week by week basis. Now, a little bit of a crossover between these two, clothing and poses. A lot of women will say, well, I'm hitting my quarter turns. Should I take off my sports bra or whatever I've got when I hit my back pose? And I'd say it doesn't matter. Just be consistent. If you always do, great. Continue to do that. If you don't, that's fine. Just make sure you're always wearing the same thing. Time. Just because we're going to talk about lighting here and how natural lighting is always the best, the time is good because we can pretty much, the time is a variable that you want to keep consistent, just because then we know that the lighting is going to be relatively the same. So if that's, you know, middle of the night when there's no natural light, okay, well, it's not ideal, but it is consistent at least. So we're hitting that at least. You know, it's difficult to hit all of these marks for people, but if you can hit most of them on a regular basis, you're going to be okay. So the best time to take your progress photos is, first of all, when it's most convenient, because that means that you will actually take them, and when lighting is available. So during the day is best, just because when I talk about lighting, I'm talking about natural lighting. We'll talk more about that shortly here. Weekends are good. For my clients who work with me, you know, I schedule check-ins for Monday through Friday. But, you know, let's say you're scheduled for right in the middle of the week on a Wednesday. Take your progress pictures on the weekend, Saturday or Sunday. That's fine. They can be 3 days old when they get to me. There'll come a time maybe when that's not the case. Like, you know, when we get closer to a showtime, I'm going to want to see pictures that are like, you know, that day or something like that. Definitely closer to the day when we're actually looking at and evaluating things. But until that stage, you know, take your progress pictures a few days earlier. You can do it at a time that's more convenient. Maybe you've got somebody to help you with. I never recommend using outside help though. But you've got the time to do it. You've got access to natural light because, you know, a lot of us are working during the day, so it's a little bit trickier. You don't need to be on an empty stomach. Progress photos do not need to be first thing in the morning all the time. Just, again, be consistent with it. So if you always take your progress pictures after meal three, great, that's fine. You're not going to have an empty stomach. I know that when I look at them, as long as, you know, you don't then 2 weeks later take them on an empty stomach. I'm like, wow, you look a lot tighter here. I mean, you know. Just be consistent. That's the important thing. And then location. So always in the same place. And again, this ties into having the same backdrop as well. Always in the same location with the same lighting, ideally, just because then I'm not trying to see small, subtle changes in your physique compared to a changing background and a changing outfit. You can see how throwing a lot of variables into the equation really makes it hard to see changes that are going to be pretty subtle on a week-to-week basis. So we need to make everything else as consistent as we possibly can. So let's talk about camera positioning, because this is important. So there's two things to take into consideration when it comes to camera positioning. That's lighting and perspective. Now, when it comes to lighting, let's go over lighting sources here. So we've got four options, realistically. You've got incandescent lighting, old school light bulbs. They are crap. Boy, you want to talk about the perfect recipe for having some unflattering progress pictures. Incandescent lighting indoors is going to be number one. Fluorescent lighting, a little bit better. There is a correlation to that. LED lighting, better still. Natural lighting, that's the winner. That's the one that we want. So you can take them outdoors. If you've got a room that has really big windows that let some light in, that's great. Get away from that light a little bit so it's not totally washing you out. We want it to be dulled down a little bit. But natural lighting is the way to go. Now, the reason why I said fluorescent lighting is typically a little bit better is because usually fluorescent lights are going to be in rooms or in buildings that have taller ceilings. So think like commercial buildings, stuff like that. Your gym, you know, your like a group fitness room in a gym. So taller ceilings are always going to be better than shorter ceilings. So it's just more space for the light to reflect. But it's also not something that you really have any control over whatsoever. You know, if you're in a standard house and you've got 8-foot ceilings everywhere, well, think of it this way. That's one thing that you can cross off your list of stuff to consider when you're taking your progress pics. It's always going to be an 8-foot ceiling. So, but if you go outside, hey, the ceiling is infinity. So, that works well. So a taller ceiling is always ideal. In my basement down here, you can see I'm very lucky to have 10-foot ceilings down here in a basement. How weird is that? It's cool. And I've got these two huge, these are like 6-foot tall windows right here. So as you can imagine, that Facebook and Instagram people, you can see what I'm doing right here. That spot right over there, underneath the staircase, right in front of that door, that's my progress photo spot. So I've got tall lights. I actually turn off the overhead lights. They are LED, but the natural light that I get here from these windows is perfect for that. So, and again, I take mine, you know, I work from home, so I have this flexibility. I take mine about 11 o'clock in the morning. The light is great in here. It's not overly flattering. It's not unflattering. It really represents a fairly true-to-life representation of what I actually look like, which is always what you're going for. So the other thing about progress pics is take them and then look at them. And if you're like, that is not what I look like, and you can actually say that honestly, change some variables around, try a different spot, and try again. Okay, and then for perspective. So here's the big thing that is a common mistake that I see in a lot of people that's a really easy one to fix, and that is your perspective's all messed up. So you're either not getting all of your body or you've got your phone down on the floor and it's looking up at you. Ideally, what we need is the camera to be positioned at about midsection height, so at about waist height, so it's looking up at your head and down at your feet. So if you've got somebody helping you take pictures, which I always recommend, go to Amazon, spend the $15 and get a really cheap Amazon Basics tripod. It's worth it. It is not something that is professional grade, but it is great for what we need for taking progress photos. If you've got a significant other that's taking your pics for you, though, and they are tall and they're holding the thing up at eye level, you're going to look like a midget. So it's going to skew your perspective. And if we're looking at this and using these progress photos as a tool to help gauge aesthetic balance, you want a proper perspective on everything. So propped on the floor, exactly the opposite thing. You're going to look like a giant. Everything's going to be skewed. Nothing's going to look right. So on a tripod or propped on something that's about at waist level, so it's looking up at your head and down at your feet, and it can see all of you. So two things that happen here is oftentimes I will get upper body progress photos only, like the camera shows from the waist up. The other thing would be is that the camera is so far away that like the photo is yay big and the person in it is like, you know, this tiny little stick figure in the middle of it. Like, I can't see what's going on. Why is your camera 20 feet away from you? with most phone cameras, if you're not using any kind of special clip-on lens or anything like that, a camera that's 5 feet in front of you positioned at waist height, 4 or 5 feet, is sufficient to get all of you in the frame. And if you're saying to yourself like, well, boy, that's really kind of close up, I can see a lot of detail there, that is the damn point. So yes, yeah, the truth can be unflattering. It might be something that you don't necessarily always want to see, but that's how we know it's there, and that's how we know what we need to improve on. So the perspective is key. I would say perspective and lighting, those are the big things, and then just making as many of these other variables consistent as you possibly can is important. The last thing to talk about just really quickly is the backdrop. You know, if you can get a plain, hopefully like white wall behind you, that's great. It's not essential, and I would not necessarily move things around in order to make that happen. I would put that lower in priority just because based on where you need to stand to use the light sources that are available to you, you might not have a white wall there. And that's the last thing that we need to worry about. So a busier background that's behind you is going to be fine if we need to do that in order to get the lighting and the perspective set up the way that we need. Conversely, also, if you are taking pictures inside, consider where your light sources are. And by that, I mean anything that emits light is a light source, which sounds really basic, but think about what that means from the perspective of a camera lens. A TV is a light source. I get a lot of progress photos where somebody is standing in front of a TV that is turned on. Turn the damn thing off. It's a light source, and you're basically taking a picture of yourself in silhouette, which you would know if you then stop to look at the photos and be like, oh, damn, all I can see is the TV, and there's this black silhouette standing in front of it. I can't see anything. So be mindful of that. Be mindful of what your camera sees as a light source, and just realize that your eye is going to see things a little bit differently. The big thing and the best way to troubleshoot progress pictures, though, is to look at them once you take them and say, does this look like me? Do I feel like this is an accurate representation of what I actually look like? And if so, great. Send them on over, save them, whatever you got to do. And if not, change some variables. Try going outside. I know it's going to start getting cold here pretty soon, but realistically, progress pics, you know, when I take mine, I take about 9 or 10 shots because I'm doing my quarter turns and some mandatories. I use a 10-second timer on my phone, so each pic takes me about 13 or 14 seconds, 10 seconds for the timer to count down, and then 3 seconds for me to push the button again and get back into position. So the whole thing takes like 2 minutes. So it should not be a huge, huge undertaking or time investment. So, okay. So that covers everything that I wanted to discuss there. So we are over time. My goodness, we've been running for 48 minutes here. I was not planning on that. So anyway, so that's it. We wrapped that up. We talked about the scale and how to use it. And then also we covered progress pics and how to improve the quality of those. So I will leave it there for this week. So I thank you all for watching on, let me see if I can get this right here, Facebook. Thank you. Instagram. Thank you all. YouTube. Thank you. If you like this, give me a thumbs up. Give me a comment as well. Heck, even subscribe, that'd be awesome. Hey, and get this. So everybody else, I finally know it. If you go to youtube.com/5starfitness, that's me. So you can check out my channel. You can go subscribe there. You can check out the website, 5starphysique.com, Instagram at 5starfit, facebook.com/5starphysique. Darren at 5starfitness.com. So email me if you've got questions, comments, topics to discuss on the podcast, anything that you want to see a video on, etc. I will make it happen. So once again, thank you all for joining. Thank you for listening on the podcast at home. I appreciate it, and I will catch you all next week.